The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to yet another rainy day. Boy, it has rained and rained over the last 3 days. I hope everybody made it through the weekend all right. I was just telling Dan, had a fun experience yesterday and looked up and saw a stain in the ceiling. At least.
It's not supposed to be there.
No, it's not supposed to be there.
It hasn't always been there.
There were multiple ones there, and it's like, no. No, and
it's gaining friends.
It was. And my first thought is, oh crap, my roof is leaking, because it rained and rained and rained. But it reminds me of the old days, Dan, back on campus. We used to have problems with water in the ceiling, and they would claim it was the roof, and it usually always turned out, no, it was the AC.
It was something else.
And that's exactly what we found yesterday. It doesn't fix the ceiling yet, and I'm not 100% sure that we've got everything else taken care of, but at least there's not a hole in the roof. So that's the best news. My goodness, Brian Matthews from Auburn Sports just walked in with his umbrella. Look out the window, Brian.
I know.
Not sunshine. I mean, 30 seconds ago, it was raining hard.
Still some rain, though. You can still tell me it's still coming down.
Yes, John Fogerty, yes, we have seen rain on a sunny day. But it is crazy how much rain we have had over the last few days.
Well, we mentioned last week.
And more
coming. Well, we mentioned.
Well, I think maybe by Wednesday we'll be okay.
It's an Omega system or something like that.
Yeah, that's what you said. Omega blocker is what you said.
Yeah, it's going to be.
I thought that was one of those new pills.
That you're talking about on TV.
It sounds like something that would be advertised during 60 Minutes. You're absolutely right. Apparently, if it's like sandwiched between cold fronts and makes it an extremely slow moving thunderstorm, and the southeast has been dealing with that for most of the last few days. It's pretty impressive that Auburn was able to get three baseball games in.
And how impressive were those three games?
Yeah, you talk about bringing the thunder, right? I mean,
they brought the thunder and the lightning, and it washed away. It was great. We were there for all but an inning.
Wow.
Of it.
Okay.
Well, we left when it was 24. We left.
How many of the runs
we left
did you
when
see?
It was 24-1.
Okay.
And all we right. as we walked to the go. Car, the guy hit the homer to make it 24-2. That's all we missed. That's the only run we missed. So we saw every single one of Auburn's 46 runs.
Wow, 46.
Because the grandkids and stuff wanted to come over. I mean, it was comfortable. On Friday. Thursday was a little warm. Comfortable. On Friday, but Auburn demolished South Carolina.
Yeah, they did. And I was not there Thursday. My youngest turned 21, so celebrating a little
great.
Bit.
Great, yeah.
I know.
Happy birthday to the youngest, Matthews.
Cassidy, yep. And I wonder if that kid celebrated his home run there to go to cut it 24-2. I would like to see that.
That I didn't see again. That was the only thing I didn't see. They didn't have much to celebrate, although game one on Friday – Was a heck of a ball game.
I will say this: I wondered
if South Carolina would just pack it in after that first loss.
Adam Cole mentioned to me that he was really impressed by the South Carolina approach in that first game
they
on Friday.
Hit the ball hard. They had 18
after
hits.
after getting destroyed the night before, to bounce back and play like that and short notice too. Right, they made the doubleheader.
Right.
They made the Friday game a doubleheader.
All of a sudden, it was an afternoon doubleheader.
They heard us talking about it and said, "Hey, maybe we got to move this game up after all." And it sounds like South Carolina gave it the old college try on Friday.
Oh, they did. I mean, Auburn. You know, it looked like Auburn's going to run away when you've got your ace on the mound. Samuel Dutton's on the mound. Yeah. Takes a 7-2 lead to the fourth inning and can't get out of the fourth.
Nope. South Carolina went ahead for a little while there.
Yeah.
I think Lucas still had the. Go-ahead home run, had a home run in each game. But going back to that first game, the home run, I bet if that kid was wearing orange and was from East Tennessee, he probably would have flipped his bat and, you know,
probably would have.
They
don't have a whole lot to celebrate.
No.
They have lost five out of six series.
But they're still trying to pick fights, though. So that's important.
Yes, they are. Well, it's because they take it so well. They're so, I don't even want to use the word. But a hard-fought game one of the doubleheader win on Friday, and then game two, another comfortable.
Yes, it was.
Another comfortable win.
Took care of business. Really good pitching. That was the best pitching of the weekend, I thought, for Auburn.
Cam Tilley was pretty darn good.
But I thought
that was nice.
I thought Griffin Graves came in and pitched really, really well in relief on the second game Saturday. Mm-hmm. That was really important, I thought, for Auburn.
And Auburn had so many standouts offensively, but I have never watched a player have back-to-back-to-back four-hit games.
That was crazy.
Like Eric Guevara.
12 hits.
12 hits in a three-game series?
Is a pretty good month.
Yeah.
Like in conference play. And he had three straight. I mean, it was the thought of.
And they weren't like bloopers, cheap hits. He drove the ball.
He's seeing a beach ball. And the thought that he's like, there was no competition for SEC Player of the Week.
Nope.
Well, there was competition probably from Auburn players.
But
Lucas Steele hit 700 and hit a couple of homers. Chris Rembert had a couple of homers and nine RBIs.
Rembert's putting together.
Rembert is on fire in a
season where multiple teams are getting solid freshman production. Chris Rembert is putting together a freshman of the year argument.
He absolutely is in the SEC.
He really is. The most crazy thing about Guevara is his average went up from 256 to 340 in one weekend.
I mean, insane. This late in the season to raise your batting average 80-plus points.
And then 250 to 381 in the SEC games.
Yeah.
That's just wild.
Auburn right now is they're really clicking. They're really clicking. I mean, now you want to see Sam Dutton get back on track, and they'll need him to without question. But that was that was probably as off a performance from him as we've seen.
Yeah, and you hope it's just because the schedule got changed up. Yeah. He was pitching a day early. A lot of stuff going on with the rain and everything. So you hope he bounces back, because if he can. The way some other pitchers are starting to come on, you're starting to feel really good about the way this team is playing defensively, offensively, and pitching-wise.
Yeah, I mean, you see it reflected in some of the national interest in Auburn. You see Auburn up to number two
in Baseball America. Yep. And I think last week, I think maybe this is Wednesday when it came out, D1 Baseball at Auburn is the fifth national seed in the NCAA tournament. So they're very much in line to be national seed right now.
They definitely should have moved up from there. Yep. So what they need to do this weekend, they need to go in. If they can win the series, I think they're a top eight national seed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And maybe if they just win one game, they are.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
But they've got a chance to win 40 games the regular season for the first time since 2000, which was Hal Bears last year. Have to win all four to do that.
That is right.
They've got a chance to win 17 games in the SEC.
They're 16 and 11 right now. They got a chance to win 19.
So it'll be the first time they won 17. I think it's been since, I don't know exactly in the regular season. I'll get that for you
in the commercial.
I'll find it.
But would that be Butch's best regular season at Auburn?
Might be. It's been a minute.
I think
minute.
It's in the mix.
I think he went 17 and 13.
But maybe the hardest thing to do now is to reach the top four in the SEC.
Yeah, maybe harder than being a national top eight seed.
Yeah, this is so many good teams.
I mean,
it is
ridiculous. Yeah,
they're
in
a three-way tie for fourth right now. There's two teams right behind them.
Yeah, they would actually be sixth at the season. Yeah. They would be the sixth seed because of the tiebreakers. Yep.
Auburn went 17 and 13 in 23.
Yep.
In conference play, that's the most. That's the best conference record they've had under Butch. They went 20 and 10 in 2010.
Maybe that was the first time they've won more than 17 games since 2010. Then they got an opportunity to do that. Then I guess that's what it is.
And that would be a new high mark. It would be new high water mark for Butch.
Mm-hmm. And it's very, very doable. Ole Miss falling to Mississippi State this past weekend. Man, it is crazy.
And what was really crazy, Texas A&M, the preseason number one team in the country.
Preseason number one team in the country. And remember, after they got off to a 1-8 start, then they got hot.
Yeah,
they won like 7 out of 8 or something, but now they've lost 6 out of the last 9, including being swept.
I think they were at home. Were they at home?
Yes.
To Missouri, which hadn't won a game, and now they have 3 wins. That's just unreal.
Yeah, Missouri making a move to try to pull out of last place.
Yeah.
They're only 2 games back of South Carolina.
You know what? Wow. Good for those kids, right? Yeah. That they're still competing and that they, after a season where they've gotten their teeth kicked in, to go out and shock Texas A&M, the preseason number one.
Yes.
I mean, it's got to feel, you know, it's got to feel a little bit like the end of Rudy. Right, like they finally get the triumph after just a unbelievable adversity and a lot of games that weren't even close in the SEC. So yeah, good for Missouri to get a couple on the board.
All right, we'd love for you to join us. We're just
tough losses for A&M.
Yeah, no kidding. Like,
That's great for Missouri.
You talk about I wonder how much heat there is there at A&M.
Really.
Your coach goes to Texas, and they're about to win the league.
Right.
And now you are the preseason number one team, and you're now 10-17 and not going to make the NCAA tournament.
And you just lost.
And you got swept by Missouri.
You're going to Georgia this weekend.
Georgia
team that just got swept by Alabama in a doubleheader.
Yeah. How much heat? I'd say surface of the sun would be like that kind of. I'd say that kind of heat.
Pretty hot. All right, Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Just underway here on the Monday Drive. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's go ahead and get to it since Shane is in early. Hey, Shane.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, I do have a question while we're talking about the baseball, rankings and all that. We are sixth, but did we win the series against Vanderbilt?
Yes.
We did, didn't we?
Yep. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Auburn has won 7 of its 9 conference series. Mm-hmm. The only two they didn't win are the two that were swept in, Georgia and Texas. Right.
Vanderbilt swept Georgia, so they are
4-2
against the other two teams.
When you have a 3-way tie, you go head to head. So Vandy's 3-0 against Georgia, 1-2 against Auburn. They're 4-2. Georgia swept Auburn, was swept by Vandy, so they're 3-3. Yep. And Auburn took 2 out of 3 from Vandy, but was swept by Georgia, so they're 2-4. Yep.
Weird. Okay, that's a lot of.
Yeah.
So we're still in it for the 4th spot.
Oh
though,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Dan was just saying Texas A&M could help Auburn out, because if Auburn could end up just tied with Vandy and Georgia gets bumped back, then Auburn has the tiebreaker since they won the head-to-head. So if A&M could go in and take 2 out of
First things first.
LSU's it's one game ahead.
It's unlike the scenarios where Auburn only where Ole Miss wins the series this weekend, and Auburn still
Auburn
like
doesn't make the top 4.
That's what I mean. So first things first, you need to probably win 2, and then see what happens in who else is in the mix there? LSU and Vandy.
Yeah, LSU's the game ahead. Vandy is the other team that Auburn
and then Alabama
tied with
I've
got the standings here.
Alabama and Tennessee are one game.
But if we tie again,
one game back.
If we have the same record as LSU, we jump them as well, correct?
Yes, that is right. And Auburn has tiebreakers with a lot of those teams. Auburn has a tiebreaker with Alabama. They have the tiebreaker with Tennessee. They've got the tiebreaker with LSU and with Vandy.
Finishing with the same conference win-loss record as LSU and only LSU would be, you'd win the tiebreaker there. Now, if you get into...
Well, I mean, as long as Georgia's not involved.
That's right.
If Georgia's not involved, Auburn's got a great shot.
Yep.
Because they have the tiebreakers over all those other teams. So they're going to be at least 4-2 head-to-head in a 3-way tie and on and on. So
you got to root for a Texas A&M.
Just root for Texas A&M.
Bounce back.
To at least win the series in Athens.
All right. Let's go, Aggie. Where you go, guys?
Appreciate it, Shane. All right, we're just underway here on the Monday Drive. Yeah, quick little math lesson there at the outset. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you. Come on in and join us here on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Are you looking to...
1-390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on this on and off. I mean, it's rain and it's crazy today. It's been sun and rain.
I know.
And sun and rain.
And even
and
when
rain.
It's sunny, sometimes you get rain.
Yeah. But we've had a good bit of rain here over the last few days. Pretty soggy out there. It looks like there's a decent chance through tomorrow. And that's something when you're talking about the possibility of having 40 wins, they need to be able to play tomorrow. But it's not a game that other than to try to get, you know, another win, it's not really anything that you have to, you know, you have to do. I mean, this is one of those games, Brian, where you see a lot of teams at the end of the year go, you know, if you're looking to get a little work for somebody, looking for a pitcher that you think might be able to help you, you go. But it's not a game that you have to have.
Especially with the series starting Thursday again.
Yeah,
they don't have that extra day of rest that you normally would when they start on Friday. So I do think you could see more of a bullpen. But you see guys, Andres Alvarez hasn't pitched much lately.
No, he hasn't.
Mason Cook hasn't pitched, but I think maybe twice all season. But he's kind of back healthy in a way. So
Parker Carlson hadn't. Did he pitch? I don't know that he pitched in the
Dylan Watts came in
series.
And Dylan
Watts
shut it down.
Blew them away.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think who else am I not thinking of that hasn't pitched a lot lately?
How much are they using Armstrong?
They used him for a little bit. He struggled.
He struggled.
I think
game,
that was the first
in game.
Too,
in the first game of the doubleheader.
Yeah. Abe Chancellor pitched really well last midweek, did he not, if I'm remembering that correctly? So he could be a guy we see. So they've got some guys that they can use without necessarily having to lean on the guys that have been more of the weekend SEC-type pitchers so far.
But, again, boy, we've talked about it. We've talked about it all year long, the possibility or the likelihood of this lineup being so dangerous top to bottom. And they really are now.
I think the fact that it's freshman driven is so crazy, right? In a sport where in an era where you're seeing everyone go to the portal and go get veterans and fill their needs that way, and you're sort of dissuaded from signing freshmen because they can leave after 1 year and go play somewhere else, and all your development could be for some other coaching staff's benefit. Amid that climate, Auburn has multiple freshmen that are a huge reason why
three.
They are where they are.
They have three everyday
lineup.
Freshmen, yep. Two of whom are among the SEC leaders in batting with Chris Rembert and Chase Fraley.
Yeah, and Bob Terrell may have the highest upside of them all. He's just he's been going through a little bit of a slump, I guess, lately.
He crushed one. Of course, I mean, it was like home run derby. I mean, I'm trying to remember all the home runs.
Frelick also, because he allows you to move Ike to a different position.
I was surprised that he caught every inning of the series.
And the analytics are crazy about him defensively this year. Like he's had a very strong season behind the plate. And then on top of that, he's the team leader in batting average in conference play.
Yeah. And he's hitting eighth.
And he's hitting eighth, and he's a freshman.
It's crazy.
It's madness. And
he has
the number two team in the country.
He has the ability. I love his ability to just take the ball to left field and not just slap it to left field. I mean, he'll drive the ball to left field. And for some reason, teams keep pitching him away. They keep playing him to pull a little bit, and if they throw anything away, he'll double to left field.
So Chase Frelick has been leading Auburn in hitting in conference games all season.
I think Guevara may have passed
him, after
right?
this weekend, he is now fifth. Ike Irish and Chris Rembert are tied for second. Eric Guevara is
Chase struggled a little bit in the doubleheader.
Yeah. And then Lucas Steele has moved up to fourth.
That's incredible. Yep. For much of the season, led the team in batting average in conference play.
Frelick is still batting. I think that's .333 if I'm reading it right, or .323.
Just remarkable.
That's right.
what's your sense of beyond Samuel Dutton in the rotation, right? Like you've got Chatterton, you've got
I think Tilly definitely gets you know another look after Thursday.
The thing you love about Tilly is he has that mentality. And when he's throwing his off speed for strikes, he can just dominate a lineup and be that guy that works fast and gets the team fired up behind him. So I'm excited to see what he can do as he gains more experience as a starter. These last couple of weeks are the first time he started in
ever.
His college career.
Yeah.
And then, you know, before this weekend, Chatterton had gone 23, 24 innings without giving up an earned run. So You've got to still be very excited about him. I thought South Carolina did a great job.
Another freshman. Yep.
Yes.
Like another freshman we're talking about.
And then, you know, Samuel Dutton, you know, he can have an off weekend. That happens to all the good ones.
What's your sense of how Cade Fisher could slot in the rest of the season? Because I was really, really impressed.
Yeah, there's another guy that we didn't see.
We didn't see this weekend, which surprised me.
Yeah.
I really felt like after what happened the previous weekend.
Thought he'd piggyback. Yeah.
That he would be – he had just become a top reliever now for Auburn. Maybe that's still the case. We'll see how that develops here tomorrow and this weekend. But I love him in a bullpen situation. You can always – you always need left-handed bullpen guys, and he could be that guy for Auburn.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's nice. I mean, when we're talking about pitchers that didn't even pitch, there's a guy that was your number two starter that didn't even pitch this past weekend against South Carolina. So, I mean, Auburn's in a good situation – as they head over to Oxford and Ole Miss. Ole Miss looking to bounce back, as we said. I mean, you know, we talked about why Mississippi State made the move because you looked at their schedule and they had a chance to win some ball games. They wanted to make that move before their coach had a chance to save his job. And now State's up to 12-15 and just a game back of Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Florida. And Ole Miss is down to 14-13 overall. So, I mean, this is it's crazy. The seeding, if you were really concerned, if there wasn't that strong likelihood that a dozen SEC teams are going to make the tournament, maybe 13 are going to make the tournament, then this would be a crazy weekend because everybody would be scratching and clawing, fighting, trying to fight for seeding, but it really doesn't matter for, I'd say, the top 12 teams.
Most of the regions in the NCAA tournament will have at least one. Well, only one. But there will only be, I mean, what are we talking about, three?
12 of the 16.
12 of the 16.
12, maybe 13 of the 16.
Three or four of the 16.
Sort of like, how about softball? Auburn's got 14.
So Auburn in, just looking ahead to the baseball postseason a little bit, Auburn in good position to host in super regional play. It would be the first time since they switched the format in 2018 that Auburn would, if they can advance past regional play.
Got to get out of your regional.
Got to win your region. But if Auburn won their region, they'd be in excellent position to be the host for super regional play. They've made it to the super regionals a couple of times under Butch.
Never
hosted a super regional. They're in position to do that this season if they can take care of business in regional play. Teams that are most often projected as, I'd say, the two seed in Auburn's region.
Like Troy?
Troy's one of them. I'd say Southern Miss, Troy, Miami. You're seeing some Duke. You're seeing some Wake Forest because they're keeping teams generally in the Southeast, and those are the teams in the Southeast that are on the two line. Of those, Auburn did play Troy a couple of times. There was the walk-off win back in February. For Auburn, and that would be you're going to have an electric atmosphere at Plainsman, like no matter what, right? With Auburn in the postseason.
I think Troy as a number two seed coming here would be just
strong.
That's strong too.
That throws a little more. You know, I just watched Jaws again over the weekend. Yes. So a little more blood in the water. You do something like that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was letting you.
No, I was just checking to see if there's anything else to add.
We don't have a Pirates lineup yet.
I wasn't looking at that. All right, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about? Obviously, we jumped in talking baseball. I mentioned softball. How about Auburn, the number two seed, and what a shock!
Yes,
Tallahassee.
Yeah. I don't know how many times total baseball and softball has been there, but it feels like
just about every time.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And a couple of times I've come out of there with wins, but it doesn't happen too often. The best thing about softball is the way they played the second half of SEC.
Mm-hmm.
They really, really improved. You can see the coaching is making a difference for that team, which you love to see. So who knows? They're the underdog. Nobody's going to pick them. Maybe they can go down there and pull an upset.
Well, it tells you again, when you look at 14 of the 15 teams are in the tournament, and Auburn goes 6-18 in conference play, and they're a two seed.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
That says a whole lot.
All right, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, this is Ryan Wade, owner and stylist at 12K Salon in downtown Auburn.
At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Baseball, Bill, Dan, and Brian.
Baseball heavy show.
Yeah.
So far, which is fine. I mean, Auburn's got the number two team in the country and a huge series win. I mean, just, I mean, they're going to need a new scoreboard. Right, they just put that one in, but I mean Auburn was lighting
Auburn
up.
Auburn scored in a lot more innings than they had zeros.
46.
And as a matter of fact, in the first couple of games, I was looking up and it's like not only were they scoring in almost every inning, they were scoring multiple runs in almost every inning. And in game one, they had innings of 3, 5, 7, and 9.
It's crazy.
I mean,
there is. I mean, looking around. I mean, you don't really have football news right now to speak of. You know, we can you know look over to Brian for some sort of like evergreen topics and stuff.
Well,
but
official visits start this weekend.
There we go.
So Auburn's got some top recruits coming in, so that's going to kick off the round of official visits here over about 4 weeks, rolling into June, and then a lot of decisions probably in July, early August.
Yeah, and the I mean basketball, You're waiting to see what Auburn does in the portal. Auburn does. I mean, I guess there is some news in that the NBA draft lottery is tonight, and much of the draft order will be set, and that impacts. Todd Pettiford's talked about it, and Bruce Pearl has talked about, you know, the teams picking 20 through 30 matter because one of those teams could be the team that Todd Pettiford, you know, that convinces Todd Pettiford to stay in the draft. That decision probably coming in the. I mean, we're about 2 weeks away from the deadline from the deadline for players to.
Yeah, the 28th, so it'd be 2 weeks from Wednesday, right?
Yeah, we're close to the deadline for players to drop out of the NBA draft and return and announce that they're returning to college basketball. And Todd Pettiford will have a decision to make as we'll learn the. The NBA draft order tonight. Obviously, Cooper Flagg, the Duke forward, Auburn saw him.
Yeah, see where he's going.
Pretty good.
He is the widely expected to be the number one pick in the draft. And there are a couple of teams holding their breath, hoping they can go secure a guy. A lot of folks think is going to be a superstar in the NBA.
Yeah. Now, as far as Auburn still looking for. An inside guy, Brian? I mean...
I don't know who they're targeting at the moment.
I mean, we were wondering if...
The kid from Louisville committed to Ole Miss.
Yes.
Signed with Ole Miss, I guess you'd say.
Signed with Ole Miss.
James Scott. So we'll see.
I mean, we're wondering, and there's been a little speculation, maybe an international player.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've got options, I'm sure, and they will find somebody to fill that spot. I think they want one more bid that can rotate in there. And they'd really like somebody that they can be a part of the team and not be a situation where you've only got seven players to rotate, right? Auburn would love to have 9 to 10 guys that can rotate in on a regular basis.
What's the thinking on Sebastian Williams-Adams as a contributor? Because that's the one I would think of as, like, maybe we're not talking enough about what Auburn has potentially coming in with the freshman post.
Right.
Because as it stands right now, Williams-Adams and Emeka would be, they'd be battling for most of the minutes in the front court after the Keyshawns.
Yeah, I mean he'll be a true freshman, 6'8", 230, so he's got some beef to him. He's not a real skinny kid. You would think he's more of a power forward, maybe a stretch forward. He's got that long 7'2" wingspan, I believe it was they talked about. When he signed with Auburn. So I do think he has the potential to help out, but, you know, a true freshman, sometimes you just don't know what to expect from them. I do think Cade Magwood, one of the freshmen, is going to come in and play.
I think he's going to have to, I mean, because he's the only other point guard that Auburn has. The only guy that's played any point.
And I think the reason that there's not another point guard is because they believe in Caden. They really think he's going to be a good player.
Well, they believe Tahad's going to be back, yep. And they believe in Caden.
Yep.
Because so. Anything were to change there, if Tahad were not to come back,
yeah,
they have to. I have no idea what direction they'd be.
My assumption is that if Tahad decided to stay in the draft, Auburn would be in the market for and probably looking at the guys that could also, like, there are some players who are in the draft right now and also in the transfer portal. RJ Lewis from St. John's, Boogie Fland from Arkansas. Boogie Fland's the one that I would have.
Well, yeah, that's right.
That's the one that I would say, hey, if you lose to Todd Pettiford and you need a ball dominant point guard, you know, scoring lead guard, Boogie Fland is the one that if Boogie Fland decides to return to college basketball, like that's the direction I would say you need to go. But there's no question they would need to add.
Oh yeah, like, no doubt. That, you know, because then you'd be going into a season with Caden Magwood as the only
right.
Yeah, unless they know something about these freshmen, we don't.
True.
You would think, like, okay, you probably need to
or transfers
or the transfers. You're right, but I mean, and Williams Adams is one to me where, I mean, yeah, it's tough to project. The freshmen for a lot of minutes, but as it stands now, you know, you probably need to have him in a Mecca as the next guys up at the four and the five.
Yeah, I don't think you've got any other options right now. So we'll see. And then,
but there's no name that folks have as like this is Auburn's current target.
At least not that I've seen
at the four and the five. Yeah.
So that will sort of just we'll have to wait and see on that.
Because the draft could also impact that, right?
Yeah.
You had players who could drop out of the draft.
There could be guys.
Now, it's going to be tough when you have the Keyshawns to lure a guy who is seriously flirting with going into the draft. It's going to be tough to lure him at the four and the five. I mean, I've wondered before. I think we've said this on the show, Bill. Like, if you're pitching, you know, the pitch to a James Scott or a Van Allen Lubin or some other post who's in demand elsewhere and has starting jobs available.
Yeah,
elsewhere.
Somebody's saying, come in here and start for us and play 25-plus minutes.
I mean,
Auburn can't say that.
Unless you say, well, Keyshawn Hall's a three. Like, I mean, that's the pitch, and you hate to bait and switch.
It would be, but the problem is, I mean, that used to be tough. It used to be tough enough to do, but now these players all – They all check with each other too, so
they got other coaches that can talk to them too. Yeah.
So they you know, I'm sure that whatever James Scott or whatever or whoever could check with Keyshawn Hall and go, where are you going to be playing? Yeah.
I think Auburn's message to James Scott was come in here, compete for a spot, play, and be on a team that can compete for national.
Rotate and we'll play everybody 20. Right. We'll try to play everybody 20 plus minutes the way Auburn was doing last year.
And I imagine some schools, and I don't know this for sure, but I imagine Ole Miss probably had more to offer as far as playing time and as far as NIL money.
Yeah,
too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
334-321-1390. Back to the Drive hotline, and Uncle Ollie is up next. Hey, Uncle.
Hey, gentlemen. Always glad to touch base with you.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Hey, isn't it a great time to be an Auburn Tiger? I mean, think about it. Golf.
Yeah.
You know, baseball, basketball. I mean, I think the football's coming around. But, you know, talking about baseball, I was talking to my brother-in-law today, and I said, you know what? Auburn's made the World Series a couple of times the last 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, they got hot, they got in, but I never really thought they were going to do anything. This year, quite honestly, if they make it, they actually might make some noise. I think they're that talented.
That would be something else. That really would. You know, they don't have like a number one draft pick, you know, number one starter, although Samuel Dutton's done terrific.
Yeah, they don't have that pitcher that's up there. Right. I mean, Ike Irish is going to be a first rounder.
I was going to say, Ike's going to be one of the first hitters off the board, it seems like.
And the thing is, Auburn's fortunate that a couple of their best hitters right now aren't draft eligible, but they've got some guys that are making noise and are catching a lot of folks' eyes.
But the thing is, none of them are an easy out. No. I mean, from 1 to 9. There's not one that's an easy out.
Now, this team could do, and you look. You want to be careful because the season is. I mean, there's a lot of teams in the SEC, and you know, it's a wacky postseason. But the No, the fact is, I mean, if you can compete with the best teams in the SEC, then when you get into the post, I mean,
they are the best teams in the country.
Those are the best teams in the country, and yeah, who knows? Who knows what this team could do?
Well, you know, it's like someone said before, it might be harder to win the SEC tournament than to win the World Series. No,
well, it is, because it's single elimination too.
Exactly. So the other thing, Jason, I know you're the big music guy.
Yes.
Brian.
That's okay. I'll answer Jason.
Do what now?
You called him Jason. It's Brian.
That's fine. Yeah.
But Brian is the big music guy.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. They're great friends.
Yeah.
No, I just know you're a big music guy. And I obviously know Bill is.
And Dan is too. Yes. Oh, Dan definitely is.
Yeah. I know. A lot of times y'all talk music trivia and this, that, and the other. So I was thinking about something I was going to mention about to see if you knew the connection between the Eagles and Steely Dan.
Oh, I mean, I know that the Eagles were the backup band for Linda Ronstadt. I don't know the connection to Steely Dan, Bill's got a smile on his face.
There's the diss track, right? There's the put on the Eagles, the neighbors are listening, right? The Steely Dan lyric where they take a shot at the Eagles.
Yeah, that's right.
You're on it, Dan. So yeah, the Steely Dan wrote a song in '78, and one of the lyrics, because Walter Becker's girlfriend was a huge obsessed with the Eagles. So they put a line in the song about turn up the Eagles so the neighbors won't hear. And so
everything you did
tribute to Steely Dan, the Eagles in Hotel California, the line, they stab it with their Steely knives.
Mm-hmm. But they just can't kill the beast.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they used the word Steely Knives.
I did not know
that. As a tribute to Steely Dan putting the lyric in there about the Eagles.
Yeah,
their payback,
I heard Don Henley on an interview once talk about Hotel California and say, like, so Steely Dan would insert words that sounded cool that didn't make sense into their songs, like, that was the sense of what they, like, they would use adjectives that
they did
non sequitur adjectives,
right about that.
And so they thought they could throw some of those into Hotel California mentioning that it's a Steely knife, you know, it's like as opposed to, you know,
and a plastic
that's why it's Steely,
and Felder actually wrote all the music and just handed it over to Don Henley and Glenn Frey and said, here's the music, come up with something.
Yeah, so things didn't work out too well after that.
No, it was, of course, you know what that's all about. It's always about money.
Oh, yes, it is.
All right, gentlemen. Y'all have a great evening.
Good hearing from you, Uncle Lolly.
I appreciate the phone call, Uncle Lolly. I guess since we're already talking about it, Brian, what was in today's music?
Oh, this is a Bill Cameron special.
I have not seen it.
Do you want to mention what you wrote about first? Do you want to go straight to the music?
I wrote about what I think is going to be a giant waste of time. This potential presidential
commission
thing. They don't have any power. They don't have any say-so. It's just going to be a bunch of noise and a bunch of headlines that comes to nothing, is my opinion on that. And then I wrote again about the playoff, because it looks like we are moving now to the 9-game SEC schedule, to the 16-game, which includes four automatic bids for the SEC and Big Ten.
I think it makes more sense if you are thinking of expanding, don't just go to 14. Right. Go ahead and get to 16.
Oh, I agree. So I talked about that a little bit. And then, Bill, you're going to get this real quickly. The musings go back 58 years, so it's 1967.
67. Oh,
okay.
The Summer of Love.
Yes.
To just the say release. You know it. Just say you know it if you know it, Bill. Don't quite answer it yet.
Yeah, yeah, because we'll see. We'll see if Dan can get it. Released one of the greatest songs of all time that became an anthem of the Summer of Love. Has been covered by
Summer of Love in there.
Yes,
okay, cool.
A thousand other artists.
Well, there are plenty of songs from 67 that have been covered by a lot of other artists.
And
I mean, is this
but it was considered the anthem.
Is it an American group or is it a British group?
British.
Okay. Because an American group, I might be thinking of Doors.
British.
It's a British group, I think I've got an idea.
Okay. Also, one more hint, Dan. Okay. One hit wonder.
Well, it wasn't exactly a one hit wonder, I think, if it's the one I'm thinking of. Because they did another song that it hit the top 40.
Yeah, they did have two that made the top 40.
Conquistador.
Right.
Okay. What is it?
Procol Harum.
Oh, okay. I know of Procol Harum, but I mean I know the song.
Wider Shade of Pale.
But like,
see, I was thinking Light My Fire, because I mean when you're talking 67. Yes.
The Doors had more hits than that though.
Yes. Like, Well, no, that was before he'd said it was a one hit.
Right. Yeah.
Like here are some things I learned about that song. First of all, Procol Harum. Their name came from a friend's cat's name. I guess it was the cat's official name. What was it called? Like their
The registered name. Yeah.
But they misspelled it, so they didn't even get that right. And then the name
I never knew where the name came from.
A Wider Shade of Pale came from a party. I think Gary Booker was at. He's the founder of Procol Harum.
Well, I always thought a wider shade of pale was odd because it usually would be a paler shade of white, not a wider shade of pale.
I guess I'm not really familiar with the covers. Did every band learn wider shade of pale? A lot of bands.
Annie Lennox had a famous cover.
That would be when local bands and things like that would play. That's one of your slow dance.
I was going to the era's wrong, but I was like Louie, like something that's just been, you know, like a song that's like almost basically like entered the public domain or something like that, you know, which is not where, you know, that's not what it ended up being. But
and it is
time
of
the season, maybe.
It's one of just 44 singles to sell more than 10 million copies, so that's pretty impressive.
Wow. Okay.
And I was going to mention, Wider Shade of Pale came from, he was at a party, overheard another lady tell another woman, "You've turned a wider shade of pale," and the whole thing sort of.
Well, that's cool, because I was going to say that is a you think about that, and that's a strange turn of the words.
Okay, so before we take a break, since we're talking music anyway, and we're not going to get much out of the next segment, because we got to wrap things up for the hour, but Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced the class of 25 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And the inductees from this year's class. Just jump in if you have a strong opinion
There are a few that I'm completely behind.
Cyndi Lauper, yes. The White Stripes, Chubby Checker, Outkast, Bad Company, Soundgarden, Joe Cocker, Salt-N-Pepa, and Warren Zevon.
It is an eclectic group.
Yeah, it really is a different group.
Really an eclectic group. Wow. Paul McCartney lobbying to get Joe Cocker in.
Yes, and I believe Billy Joel lobbying for Zevon as someone, you know, some of the piano guys have fought for Warren Zevon as someone who belongs in. The Chubby Checker's odd because it's like I think it's more the song.
It's a song, yeah.
It's not like a sustained career of making hits.
He did Let's Twist Again.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, that's pretty much it.
And Soundgarden, because they weren't a pop band at all.
No.
Like Soundgarden was such a hard rock band in the 90s. Like I think they belong in, I suppose, but like
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has become much more than just
like
rock
pop
and roll.
It's almost like a pop music Hall of Fame, yeah. By the way, Mariah Carey not getting in. You want to talk about the pop music Hall of Fame? You know, if it's Pop Music Hall of Fame,
she should be in.
She's like Tony Gwynn. Music Hall of Fame, but like, yeah, you know, that maybe that feels like there's still some rock and roll, like, you know, elements to it.
There are some that are going, come on.
But I mean, I would say check the Billboard charts, right?
Like, it's, yeah, well, but I can see where some, you know, hardcore purists, rock and rollers are going, nah, not yet. Not while I'm still voting. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. We're doing a little more music trivia here. Montgomery's own. We've got a couple of minutes left here in hour number one of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. Yeah, you didn't get a chance to get the quick plug for your musings.
I mean, you talked about it.
Did you hear
sponsored by delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. I didn't think so. Give it a try. It's delicious, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama. BMAT 15 gets you 15% off that online order. I wanted to mention Ty Pettiford. I guess they came out with the measurements from the draft combine.
Uh-huh.
6'1¼", which is taller than I thought he was. I didn't realize he was 6 foot.
No, I thought he was 6 foot.
So. 168.8 and a 6'5½" wingspan, 8 foot standing reach.
Well, that's a pretty good wingspan for a six.
Jani Broome, 6'9¼", 249.4, so almost 250. And a 7¼-foot wingspan. That's terrific.
That's good. Yeah. That is really good.
And it's selfishly, like, I'd love to see Todd play another year of college basketball just because he's such an exciting player. I also think he has, compared to guys who have had to make this decision recently at Auburn, Jani Broome, even Sharif Cooper, like, I think Todd has more to gain from another year of college basketball than those guys did. Those guys had good seasons. I know Sharif didn't play all that much, but they had good seasons and got to show the NBA.
Yeah, they were more the guy, the man, you know.
And I think with Tahad, like, this year with a different role and his team. And further and more development,
yeah.
I think he could play his way into the 26 or 27 lottery. And that's probably not where he is in 25. But some team might say, in 25, you can get lottery talent at a late first, early second round price. You know, maybe that argument wins the day.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive just getting underway. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com here in the studio. Drew's taking off after a tough semester.
Visiting some family. enjoying
his
time.
He worked all semester.
He did work all semester.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Drew getting a few days off. Dan is at the controls today. We'd love for you to join in here in hour number two of the drive. We spent a good bit of time in the first hour talking about baseball after a very successful weekend for Auburn baseball. What did Auburn hit as a team? Brian, you got the team stats from the weekend?
Yeah, they hit .451 as a team, 11 home runs, 44 RBI.
That's pretty good doubles. Because they scored 46 runs. Yeah. They drove in 44 of the 46.
See what their slugging
in
percentage
three
was.
Games.
Unbelievable.
841 slugging percentage of the team. Is that right? It's dark in here.
841 slugging.
What were the two runs that weren't bad? Was there a base rate of errors? Errors at third?
They didn't make a whole lot of errors. I mean, South Carolina didn't make an awful lot of errors.
Well, that winning run that Rivera knocked in was unearned, right? On the safety squeeze. I don't think he got RBI for that.
He should have.
Oh, really?
You get an RBI for a safety squeeze. Huh. As a matter of fact, he got a hit for it because they didn't cover first base. They didn't have anywhere to throw it.
I don't know if that's how they scored it. I have to look back.
Well, I think he had three hits going into that at bat.
Okay, maybe.
Didn't seem like that guy was going home with the ball.
No.
Which was.
No, it's like he. Well, it's like maybe out of the corner of his eye and you couldn't get it. What any sense throwing to first either?
But you're old. But the only plays at home, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the game's over if the run scores. So
that was about the only time Eric did not smash the ball.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. Yeah, Guevara, the SEC Player of the Week, batted .800, 12 for 15. Yeah. 12 for 15. He went 4 for 5.
These numbers don't make sense.
4 for 5, three straight days.
I couldn't do that with a T-ball.
Yeah.
No.
He batted 800 with hard contact. Multiple
homers. How many? He had.
Crazy.
He had multiple doubles, two homers, 9 RBIs. Just a fantastic weekend.
Destroyed.
Great to see him healthy because there's no question. Butch Thompson and, Auburn folks have been waiting to see him healthy, knew they had something special in him last year as a freshman.
Yep. That's the reason they brought him back so early when he really was 100% last year and had the hamstring this year, but he's finally gotten healthy, then got a string of games under his belt, and now you see what's happening.
And
now.
You know what else? He is an outstanding defensive
he
third
really
baseman,
is.
Too.
Got quick hands.
Man, he made a couple of really nice plays there at third base. Speaking of Auburn baseball, oh no, we normally have Derek Fabian on with us on Mondays, but there because of their schedule this week, he's unable to be with us this afternoon. So no baseball Tiger takes today. Shame. After a huge weekend, and Derek hit 364 on the weekend, and I mean, it's like
three doubles. Yeah, led the team with three doubles.
Yeah,
and this is all because of the weather. By the way, Auburn had to move some things around. They want to get some work in. They had to move some workouts around yesterday,
right?
Because of the weather, and so we're gonna, you know, usually when Derek would be free in hour number two, we could call him live. He's not available today. I think Jacob's gonna try to track him down at some point this week, and we'll have an interview for you, brought to you by 12K Salon. With Derek Fabian, but that will not be on today's
show. This afternoon. Now, again, right now, as of right now, everything's still on for tomorrow night's game against Jack State over at Plainsman Park. That will be the final regular season home game. Yep. I will be shocked if it is the final game at Plainsman Park this year.
Yeah, they're going to host a regional. I feel almost certain about that. And
yeah, I think even worst-case scenario, I still think they're a top 16 team.
And I'm going to write about this probably in the next couple of days, but their home field advantage has grown.
It really has.
Over this past year with all the changes they've made. And this team is tough at home, really tough.
Yeah, I mean, considering you look right now at Auburn 16-11 in conference play, but they were swept in two road series. Yep. The other two road series, Auburn's 4-8 on the road. So you can do the math. That means they're 12. They finished 12-3.
I think that's a
at home in the SEC.
I believe that's a new record for Auburn. I'll check that out again, but I'm pretty sure I saw that earlier today.
Auburn's lineup was like a Clarence Carter song, Bill. That's what Auburn's lineup was doing, right? I mean, they were stroking it this weekend.
They were. I said during the Thursday game, I felt for – there were a couple of fans in the stands that were trying to keep scorebooks. It's like, you don't have enough – there's not enough lines because you were batting around so many times.
Run out of ink, right? You like need a new pencil or something.
Well, you have to keep moving things over, and it's like you're in the 15th inning or something when you're batting in the eighth.
The 12 wins tied 1999 for the most wins. Sorry.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Sky Bar. Let's get to it, and John is up first this hour. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Reminded me of an old Skip Carey line. You say like an old rock and roll DJ, the hits just keep on coming. But it was really impressive this weekend. Had a question. Missouri swept A&M, and is the Mineri buyout at $5 million and the A&M coach whose name escapes me at $3 million? Those seem like awfully high price tags to run either of those coaches after year one, doesn't it?
Yes. Plus the era we're in now, that just is obscene to have to pay a baseball coach that much. I just can't imagine a team doing that right now.
But imagine how, those two schools.
Right.
South Carolina, has a national champ. They've got a national championship trophy. And here they are, threatening to be at the bottom of the SEC this year. Yeah. So
A&M was, we talked about it earlier in the show, but the problems are compounded for A&M. Not only were they the number one preseason team, and it's not really working out on the field for them, they're 10-17 in the league, but you also have the former coach who's succeeding at Texas in his first year.
Yep.
And to make matters worse, you lose like you did this weekend to Missouri. I don't think he's I don't think Michael Early is. I don't know. I don't know exactly what.
I'd say it's more. Something's more likely to happen at A&M, John, than it is at South Carolina. But
I agree. And one comment I wanted to make. I don't know if any of y'all saw it, but after game two Friday night, and I can imagine a lot of emotions going through Mineri after getting swept, and in the manner he did, a lot of heat on him. He actually took his time. I saw him with Dutton, the Auburn ace pitcher, and just was really talking with Dutton, hands on his shoulders, talking to him, just, I guess, encouraging him. I saw Dutton mouth, thank you and all that. But, really took time out of his post game to be sincere and be a gentleman. And I think that goes a long way in that sport, and I think that's something that's missing in Knoxville, and I don't know what you do if you're the administration there.
Yeah, that's a good point, John.
I think that's, and I don't want to, there are people who listen to the show that probably know Maneri better than we do, but like, I think that's not out of character or like off brand for him to be doing something like that. And you're right. You hope that folks recognize, without singling anyone out, you hope that folks recognize like that's the best way to do it. You know what I mean? It's not I guess not the only way, but a lot of folks could serve to follow that example.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John.
Appreciate the call, John. Yeah, it was good. And by the way, it was good to meet John. John came over and introduced himself at the ball game the other night. So 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hour number two of the show brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com.
Brian, you mentioned that official visits are about to start gearing back up with football recruiting. Can I ask you, before we get into the official visit business, do you get the sense that Auburn is done with this year's roster, or is there still, I mean, they added, I guess the most recent guy would have been Pleasant, right? The Tulane defensive back. The portal is closed, but that doesn't mean the guys that already were in the portal, like they all still need homes. And Auburn is space on the roster. Yeah. Auburn football is in the...
They've got two or three spots.
I think Carlos Moore, the tackle from Elon that visited, maybe a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's supposed to do something that he said in the next 72 hours yesterday, I believe. Yeah. But it sure looks like he's going to go to Maryland. I mean, he's from the area. He talked about, he loved Jake Thornton. He loved visiting Auburn. But at Maryland, he had an opportunity to play quicker, and it's closer to home.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's...
Well, we've wondered. I mean, the there aren't a lot of spots. And this is, look, to Hugh Freeze's credit and to the team's credit, like, there aren't a lot of spots where you feel like, oh, man, they need to go find a contributor right now. It's urgent. There were springs the last 2 years where you felt that way, coming out of spring practice. You thought there were positions that urgently needed help and needed to be addressed. I mean, I think that if Auburn signaled that somebody with a track record as a pass catcher at the tight end position was on their radar, and they wanted to like that would seemingly bring in something they don't have right now on the roster. But otherwise, like, I mean, it's tough to convince a guy right now, hey, especially an upperclassman, like, hey, you're gonna come in and you're gonna battle to maybe be the number two. You're going to battle with young guys to be the backup. Like, guys, it's easier to sell. And I think there's a little bit of this with Auburn on the recruiting trail in basketball, trying to find forwards, where it's like, it's easier to sell playing time to recruits, like to impact recruits, than, oh, well, it's... we'll carve out...
We've got a timeshare.
Yeah, we'll carve out some space for you, something like that. And that's, like... I think that's one of the reasons why it's been a more quiet spring.
Yeah, it has. I mean, now they went out and got immediately, Brian, what they needed to get: defensive lineman and a linebacker and a defensive back. I mean,
their main goal,
needed those, and they addressed them quickly.
Yep, their main goal was to shore up the middle of their defense. They went out there and got two defensive tackles, middle linebacker Caleb Wheatley from Maryland, and they went and got a DB, Rashawn Pleasant. It's probably a cornerback, but that can allow them to move maybe some guys over.
They
to
have so much flexibility with guys that can play multiple positions back there. And those were what they felt were their biggest needs.
Right.
And they jumped on them.
And after that,
it's like, it's sort of like you're late in the draft.
Right.
And you feel pretty good about your team. It's like, try to get the best player available if you can.
The reason I like Carlos
But they
Moore
don't have to.
Is his big tackle body, and he had 2 years of eligibility. So he would be brought in to, compete, but probably
gap.
A backup, and then maybe be a starter next year.
Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, you're seeing more and more of the folks that are looking at this fall that are saying, hey, this Auburn team ought to be significantly improved on the field. I mean, now that's where we've got to see. That's where we've got to see it.
Yep.
Because there's no way around it now. You can't. You can't look at this roster and go, they don't stand a chance.
Yeah, they need some guys to step up. Starts at quarterback, right? They need better play at that position. And then,
they've got more proven. Right. They've got more proven commodities at quarterback. Now they've got they have competition with it, and with Ashton Daniels coming in, I mean, there's a guy who has been a starter in the Power Five for multiple years. Who's going to come in and give you somebody else with experience to go along with the outstanding freshman and the very talented young quarterback in Jackson Arnold.
And I could actually see any three of those guys starting by game four, game five, depending on how it goes. So I think that's still an open competition in a lot of ways, although I think Jackson Arnold is the guy who will probably be the starter.
He should be.
Right. But he is surrounded by experienced,
Boy, he's
talented
got some.
Receivers.
He's got some weapons at the skill positions.
Finally has a left tackle, you feel like, who can, when he's healthy, can be a difference maker at the position. Got a couple of guys that can play right tackle now. He's got four or five quality running backs, experienced guys.
And should have a really good defense.
Yep.
I mean, we mentioned like one of the things that went wrong for Auburn last year was if Thorne's going to be the only guy on the team with experience. I know Hank Brown, had a half dozen passes in the bowl game or whatever, but going into last season, Thorne was really the only quarterback on the team with any experience. He was the number one quarterback the entire offseason. And when you decide to pull him in week two or week three, like you're not able to go to anyone else with experience, right? By keeping Thorne as the by sticking with the same quarterback room, and there are benefits to sticking with that quarterback room. If it works out, folks will be like, well, look at the way they develop. But when it doesn't work out, then it becomes it's easy to second guess, should there have been competition brought in for Thorne last year? And I think Auburn's done a good job of making sure that this year's quarterback won't be, they're not there by default. Like, they're not just the only viable option. It's, like Brian said, you've got two guys who have played Power Five conference football and a freshman that was a consensus, top four, top five quarterback coming out of high school football this year. I mean, it just seems like it's a different approach this year, and maybe it has something to do with the way things didn't work out, the way things kind of fizzled at the quarterback position last year for Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, it set Auburn back, right? I think Auburn underachieved last year. Part of that was at the quarterback position. They went out and brought in a brand new room, complete turnover at that quarterback position, and we will see if that can make the difference in this offense and see if it can become more explosive. I think when Hugh Freeze was hired, everybody expected him to be a really good recruiter and Auburn to have a really exciting passing offense, big play offense, and that second part just has not come close to happening yet.
I only got to see the one practice where Arnold got hurt. But in that practice, I mentioned it to Andy Burcham when we were chatting, and I think I said it to Bill too. Like, watching Arnold process, like watching him go from one read to the next, even in, granted, it's 7-on-7, it's skeleton drills and stuff, but like that felt and make a quick, like from when the ball's chest level to when it's out of his hand, like that's a very quick,
well, yeah, you could see him going to 1-2-3.
And making
the right decision. Yeah. The guy that was open is where the ball was going.
And making all the throws. If it needed to go to the back corner, if it needed to go over the middle with some zip, like doing all that too. But seeing it work, I don't know. I see why I see what Hugh Freeze wanted in this guy. Mm-hmm. And you see how it could work out this fall.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number one. It's hour number two.
There we go. Yeah,
time is flying. It is the 5 o'clock hour. Bill, Dan, and Brian here with you. Come on in and join us on the Monday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Are you looking?
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive, Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. B-Matt, so You were mentioning a big occasion. Your youngest turning 21. I mean, it's like
it's crazy.
Time flies.
And then another daughter's getting married in September. So.
Oh wow.
Yep. It does fly.
Yes, it does.
As we're sort of, we're here toward getting near the end of, you know, the spring sports. Auburn's still got quite a bit of competition. I mean, men's golf is hosting.
First, I believe, today.
Yep. And they are the number one national seed.
Pretty good.
They've got a pretty good squad.
Yeah.
It has been a really good spring for Auburn Athletics.
Really has. Baseball's come on strong. Softball finished the season really strong. As you mentioned, golf. What else? I think women's golf was pretty good this year. Tennis has been doing really well.
Yeah. And any word on? I mean, you mentioned that the recruiting visits kick back into gear.
Yes.
Anybody on Auburn's radar? Anybody that you know could be early on the list?
I don't like follow recruiting as much as I used to. Caleb handles that for us, but he has a full list on our message board, The Bunker. And I think right now he has about 9 or 10 guys already scheduled for this weekend coming in, and I'm sure that'll be updated through the week. There's usually additions and subtractions as we get closer to the weekend.
Yeah, it seems like there's not as much news at this point this year, probably because it was such an unbelievably good year in the state this past year.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm looking at this list. I believe Jay Lamar, a running back, is a really talented dude. I know Bryce Perry Wright, a defensive lineman, is one of the top ones in the country. And then there's just some guys I just don't know a whole lot about at this moment. Travis Burgess, one of the top quarterback targets, potential guy. He's coming in the next weekend, May 30th. So that'll be one to watch really closely that weekend. So we'll continue to have plenty of updates there. I know Caleb is on top of that.
Yeah, and this is very important with players being able to come in, because some of them are going to start making up their minds before too terribly long.
They are. It's going to be every weekend through June, the middle of June, June 13th through 15th. And then after that, you figure players will start making more decisions through the end of June and July. And Auburn's class will probably go up close to 20 commitments, I would imagine, before we get to the start of the season, would be my guess.
Brian, a while ago, you were talking about when we were talking about the musings. You were talking about the commission it's there. It's
right.
It sounds good, but it's like one of those things where, hey, we don't know what we're doing. Let's form a committee.
Exactly.
You know, that's what they have done. I mean, we're still waiting. We're still waiting
for the House.
Yeah, for the House versus NCAA, which was supposed to have been turned. Yep. Did we ever see anything from that last week?
We know that I believe it's being reviewed.
It's the roster limits.
But they met the deadline for what the judge
they
wanted.
They got something into the judge.
Yeah, and now the next move would be, I believe, that people who could potentially object and other sides are looking over that, and it could get the stamp of approval from
this is the $2.8 billion House settlement.
Right.
That will, if it's approved, will bring in the era of revenue sharing.
It will be the university's paying players.
Right, around 20 and a half, 21, whatever it's going to be per school, at least in the SEC or so. I don't know if it's going to be different for other schools and other conferences, but it's really big. Schools have been preparing for it for months now, but it still has not gone through quite yet.
The one crucial thing that the government could provide the NCAA that the NCAA cannot give themselves, whether it comes from the executive branch, the president, and a committee formed by the president, or through Congress, is antitrust protection.
That's got to be a law passed through Congress.
Yeah, that's got to be.
I don't think that's going to happen.
And I know Jim Phillips has talked about that. Like any real plan move forward. In fact, I can quote him here. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips said, we need to make sure that we have something that comes out of Washington that connects all 50 of the states, because we've had a piecemeal project and it's undermined college sports.
Oh, it has been ridiculous with different states trying to top other states.
It's been a race to the bottom. We need some legal protection. We cannot sustain one legal case after another legal case after another legal case.
That's all their fault, though.
And
they act like the victims, but they're not the victims.
Well, but it's not the commissioner of the ACC or the commissioner of the SEC's fault.
But they're all thrown in together.
Yeah.
Right. It's the leadership of college sports and college football and college athletics that have brought this upon themselves, in my opinion.
And then the third thing is a reaffirmation that these are student athletes. unquote. Which
that's not happening.
I wonder if that means and not employees.
It's the same thing they've been saying for decades.
I just wonder, what do you mean reaffirmation of these instead of employees in the university? Like, is that what goes unsaid in when he says
most places where you're paid by somebody.
But
they're the employer, you're the employee.
But I do agree that seemingly anything that ends, well, you have different laws in different states, and instead you're going to have
that
a
black. Like,
I think anything that gets you there is probably for the better.
Yes.
But no, I think that there's obviously, I understand.
Needs to be some uniformity.
But I understand skepticism from folks who think that this thing's going to get fixed with the government getting involved.
Yeah, you're far from having seen your last lawsuits.
Although they can't, the government can't apply pressure in these situations. And I think about 20 something years ago when the Canseco book came out, and there was like baseball wasn't going to give themselves a drug testing policy. Like, it was going to take some pressure from the outside and some review of baseball's antitrust and some, like, that's what ultimately got, like, public.
Yeah, well, they threatened their antitrust.
Public outcry got Congress involved, and Congress got, and pressure from Congress got a real drug testing policy put into place in Major League Baseball. This is a little bit different because it's not as though Congress needs to pressure Charlie Baker into doing something as the head of the NCAA. It would actually, like, the help would need, like, laws or regulations.
Baker and the NCAA and college football are pleading with the government to do something for them.
Yeah, it's not as though, it's not, I mean, in the case 20 years ago, it was almost as though Congress had to sort of prod and pressure.
Yeah, twist their arm.
Major League Baseball into doing something. This is different. Yeah.
One thing I mentioned was, go back 7, 8, 9 years, whatever it is, and sit down at the table with these players, consider them employees or whatever form you want to do, collectively bargain with them and come up with a plan for college sports. It could have been done, should have been done. Had it been done, these players would not be getting close to 20, 21 million.
No kidding.
There would be no such thing as unlimited transfers. And there would be
All they wanted was something for the rights on the video games.
Yeah.
They would have taken. Just think of what they would have taken as considered compared to what they're getting now.
But just think of how much bargaining power they've lost. If they go to the table now and finally, get some common sense, they're starting at $20 million per school. They're starting at unlimited transfers, and they're starting with almost, unlimited eligibility rules, whatever, case gets, approved or knocked down or whatever. That changes every month. But they have just really blown it. They have completely blown it. They're desperate. They're trying to figure out a different way. They're begging Congress to do something. It's just not going to happen. They need to sit down and settle this among themselves.
I'll tell you where I disagree though, Bill, is like if they had given in on the video game 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I don't think it would have stopped with the video game 10 years ago, 12
they
years
had
ago.
Like, they had to make him an employee.
That was the fear, may not, well,
that was
I,
the fear
maybe,
of the NCAA back then, is that once you start to chip away at what you're allowed to do to earn money as an amateur athlete.
But that was actually a real name image.
Oh, yeah.
It was their likeness.
It was
their likeness. So, I mean, that could have – it might have been able to keep things sort of – from going off the cliff.
For sure. But I think that was – but one of the – like, when the video game was around before it went away, the thinking was, well, why don't you just pay the players and have the actual players in this video game? And I think the belief was, well,
that goes against amateurism.
Well, it gets the ball rolling on players being able to earn on their name, image, and likeness in a variety of ways. And so they fought any progress on this, thinking it would chip away at their position. And then one day they lost a court battle, and the ball has been, I mean, it's like Indiana Jones. Right? Like, the ball had been rolling. Like, the boulder has been chasing the NCAA for years ever since. And we'll see.
It's coming faster and faster bigger and bigger.
Getting closer.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise or otherwise here on the Monday Drive.
The and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Monday afternoon.
Didn't really mention, I mean, the NBA draft lottery is tonight, and that could impact Todd Pettiford's decision. Curious to see who ends up with the number one overall pick when the NBA, breaks out the old game show set for tonight's draft lottery. There are other Auburn players other than Todd who have professional aspirations and are, I mean, Janai is projected to go in most mock drafts, not a first rounder, I'd say by consensus, but in the mix to be selected and maybe early in the second round.
Yeah,
I don't think that a draft selection is likely for Miles or Denver or Dillon, but I think all three of them have the opportunity
Sound like Dillon had a couple of nice moments.
I think Dillon's an intriguing player.
I think so too.
Like, I don't know how much better folks expect him to get, but what he is right now can help a team because a lot of, like, he's sort of, it's old-fashioned, mm-hmm. right? Like, he's an old-fashioned rim-protecting,
right.
explosive athlete down low. He's not trying to be a point forward. He's not trying to be a shooter. He's not trying to put the ball on the floor. Like I think knowing
he can be a defender and rim protector.
Yeah, I think knowing and embracing what he's good at, and sort of focusing his game, specializing his game on those areas, I think it could lead to Dillon having a professional career. I wouldn't even rule out, as crazy as it sounds, I wouldn't even rule out the NBA. I would not even rule out the NBA because. There aren't a lot of guys doing what Dillon does at his size. I think a smart organization in the NBA calls Dillon after the draft is over, like right after the draft is over, and says, like, let's get you into the summer league. Let's take a look and see. And you don't want to pay a premium for that because the downsides are too prevalent. But absolutely. That's a guy who can that's a guy who can help you, and you'd love to find somebody like that on the in the figurative bargain basement, the bargain bin.
Did you ran the Tiger Takes with him, right?
Yes.
On Friday. Yeah. Do you hear his comment said, look, every team needs a Dillon Carter.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's not wrong. I mean, it absolutely could help quite a few teams.
Sure. I mean, and it's not as though. Like, I understand teams want to spend their draft picks and even some of their undrafted free agent slots on guys that are still in the process of getting better. They prioritize youth. They prioritize tools and all that. But I think a finished product who is very good at a couple of things that maybe not every post excels at, can mm-hmm. be, I think there's absolutely, you call him a garbage man or a dirty work post, whatever it is. Like, I think there's the chance of Dillon working his way into, onto the radar for, and again, probably not with a draft pick, but working his way onto somebody's radar.
Yeah, I think he has that opportunity. So,
and this probably doesn't matter too much, but you also come away charmed by the guy.
Yeah, you like, can't.
I wonder if that's not like.
I mean, the guy.
I imagine that can get you far. In life, or it can't hurt. So,
oh yeah, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Dan is Dan. Since he's running the board, also manning the phones today. Who we got?
We got Pat on the phone.
Hey guys.
Hey Pat.
Hey Brian. I it's amazing. A couple of years ago, I almost disagreed with almost everything you said. it was weird, but I just couldn't. I just couldn't understand your thought processes. But now, like this year, like I agree with almost everything you say.
Good. We're vibing now. That's good. That's good.
I know, man. Yeah. It's crazy. But the one thing I gotta say, just because it's kind of funny if you think about it, you're thinking about this whole this whole thing about how the NCAA brought it upon themselves.
Yes.
But you say, okay, and I get where you're going, but, you know, it's like if only they'd have just given them a little more money and just given them a little bit more of this, you know.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying that they needed to sit down with them, collectively bargain, call them employees, and get this thing entirely done 6 or 7 years ago, and we would have a totally different looking college football, college athletic landscape.
I think Brian's saying that trying to stand in the way of progress, the NCAA by standing in the way of progress, sort of created the mess they're in right now in a lot of ways, where if they'd been more open to student athletes receiving compensation over the last 20 or 30 years, if they hadn't fought any attempt by student athletes to get paid, maybe they wouldn't be in such a precarious position right now.
Well, and what I was just, the one thing I was trying to say was it just sounds so familiar. If you just go back in history, it's like if only the slave owners had just given those poor slaves just a little bit better bedding, a little bit more food, a little bit more money, just so they could so they'd be happy and they wouldn't complain.
I definitely am not saying that.
I'm not. I know you're not. I'm just saying it. That's kind of what it is.
I don't want to endorse the metaphor either. But I will say I get that, like, it's like propping up an unfair system, right? As opposed
to
tearing it down and saying, all right, well, this is what should happen. Which I do feel like we're closer.
Well, amateurism has been torn to pieces.
Yeah, the fact that
they should have known this was coming.
The fact that student athletes can, for the first time in the history of the NCAA, like legally receive money for their name, image, and likeness. Like, I do feel like we're closer to being like where we should be than ever before. But it's just a matter of we were saying earlier, the bigger problem to me seems to be the rules are unclear state to state or conference to conference,
they're by no means anywhere similar. I mean, they're not only are they not the same, sometimes crossing state lines, it's tremendous difference, and that is a big concern when you've got schools in the same conference that are dealing with different rules than their competitors and the schools they're competing against.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what proves the whole thing, though, is that because every state can do everything differently, you're trying to put rules and law and limits on people making money, and that's just not the American way.
Right.
And I'm just saying it's just not, it's just a matter of time before the Supreme Court has to rule when a case goes all the way up. That you cannot tell somebody that they cannot make money as long as what they're doing is legal.
They ruled 9-0, 9-0 in the Alston case, which was basically about amateurism, and basically told the NCAA they were full of you know what. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. Should have been, okay, we need to throw our hands up and quit trying to keep the status quo and make the changes now. And we would not be in the same position we are now, but they just keep trying to bring back.
They're trying to hold on to that bag of gold.
They just can't give it away.
There's holes in the bag, and the gold's coming out fast. That's the problem. So, but yeah, it is funny, though. But I really don't think it was just a matter of time that people were going to realize, hey, how come I can't make money? You know, it's just if somebody wants to pay you $1 million to stand out in the front yard and sing hallelujah, that then they could do it.
And I'll tell you what else, Pat. The growing revenue, the broadcast contracts, and the growing size of those made it even more pronounced, because you're talking about, like, when student athletes weren't getting anything more than the scholarship and the cost of
and living. the amount the coaches were making
the stipend,
they can go anywhere anytime they want to without any penalty.
You saw the coaching salaries skyrocket. You saw the deals being made between conferences and ESPN skyrocketing. And I think it's fair for labor to wonder.
Yeah, right? Where's mine?
Hey, where's mine? Where's my
exactly? You're exactly right. But also, there's one other thing you have to think about is until you tell every person that goes to a college that they can only go to college for 4 years, you can't tell an athlete that they can only go to that college for 4 years. And you can't tell them that while they're in college, they can't play the flute, or they can't join a fraternity. You can't tell that unless you tell every single student in America, you have 4 years to 5 years to go to college. And if you don't get it done then you're out. you're treating them differently than everybody else, and that's America. Everyone needs to be treated the same, and that's what I think. It's just taking time, but eventually, I'm telling you, somebody's going to sue, and like you said, it's going to happen. I mean, unless they were to make a country club, make an NCAA, just like they did the NFL, and have every single school sign up and say, yes, we're going to do it this way, and these are the rules, and these are the lines. But I don't think you're ever going to be able to get 377 schools to all sign up for that. That's the only way. You have to make it its own NFL, its own country club, or golf club. If you're going to play for us, you're going to follow these rules, and this is the way it is. That's the only way. But the NCAA, nobody ever signed. No college player ever signed a thing saying, I'm agreeing to only go to college for 4 years, play football for 4 years. They've never signed that with the NCAA. And if they had, the NCAA would have showed it to the judge, and they would have won. There would be no question junior college players can't come back because they would have had this, they would have signed a contract. But they never did. That's the whole point. All the NFL teams signed it. All their organizers, all the people that owners, they all signed it.
The NFL doesn't have any limits. I mean, there are no limits to how long you can play in the NFL.
But they make their own rules. The NFL, you join the NFL, the owner has to sign a thing. I'm going to follow the rules of the NFL. The NFL goes and makes up all their rules.
Well, that's what the NCAA thought they had. They had that for
but they didn't.
Close to, well, they did. They did for 80-something years, or from 1933.
Over 100 years, yeah,
I mean,
they had people convinced, but they didn't.
They had schools
that
were they had schools that had agreed to follow those rules. That's what they had.
But if there was a set contract that the rules that they made were signed upon and everyone agreed to it, they would show that.
But
the
rules. But here's an important distinction, Pat. The rules being agreed to by the NCAA and the colleges.
Art law.
Does not necessarily mean those rules will hold up if a judge evaluates them because a player is suing them for legality. So even though the schools and the NCAA agree, that's not like the work's not done. Like as we've learned, because then they have to pass inspection and follow American federal and state law. Great stuff, Pat. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, we need to get to our final break. Who've we got?
Anthony is.
Yeah, Anthony, hang on. We'll get to that. We'll get to you as soon as we come back for our final segment here on the Monday Drive.
You can help others in your community. Opelika.
Be a part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the Monday edition of the drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron. I had to take a phone call. He jumped out real quick, but he's still around. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is in the studio. Appreciate Brian hanging out with us for the 2 hours of the show. Let's get to Anthony, who's been hanging on for a little while. What's up, Anthony?
You know, guys, if you look at NIL, look at the season that Vandy had last year. If you take away NIL and the way the transport is set up, Vandy wouldn't have had a season like that. Those guys wouldn't have been able to celebrate like they did with wins over Auburn and Alabama and Virginia Tech, and played Texas real close and got in a bowl game and won that and was able to hoist up a trophy at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That don't happen at Vanderbilt football very often. Come out going bowling or hoisting up any kind of trophy of any kind at the end of any season or during the season. And you got to, I mean, you think about it now. It helped them do that. And then look at the other teams that might need one player here or there that got them in the playoffs or a team that bought a certain number of players that end up winning a national title or whatnot. I mean, you know, you think about it, it has leveled the playing field because now there's no such thing as taking a Saturday off against a Vanderbilt or Mississippi State or any little school that you used to just beat into a pulp. It's no longer that because now you got to battle these teams all the way to the end because they got a horse or two that they normally wouldn't have just because of cash, good old-fashioned cash money.
Yeah.
And I'm all in favor for a player getting all he can get. Now, I know Bill remembers Tyrone Prothro when Shula had him in a game that was already decided, had business with a player that caliber in a game. And the way he broke
that's
his
right.
leg, I hadn't seen anything like that before. Well, that's the second time I saw that because LT broke Joe Theismann's leg in a Monday night football game. That's the worst. Those are two worst things I've ever seen.
Who was the Miami running back? Remember the national championship game? Willis McGahee. That's right there. These are the worst catastrophic leg injuries you'll see on a football field.
So what I'm saying is, those guys, when they were playing, there was no NIL money. So Willis McGahee did rehab and get in the pros, but the other guys...
Willis McGahee probably went pro before he should have because he needed to rehab that knee, remember? But it's the same. It's the same thing. You're right. It's
but what I'm saying is
financial protection would have mattered a lot.
But without any NIL money, pro, he was able to go back to school and graduate. But look at the potential that he might have had.
That's right.
As far as going to the draft or any kind of NFL career he probably could have had that injury not occurred, because he had no business in the game that late. It was already decided. That's just foolish coaching there. But what I'm getting at here. Look at all the money that coaches have made. Look at Saban. This guy in his prime of everything was making, what, 12, 13, 14 million a season with football. And then you look at the endorsement deals he's gotten all along the way.
And the Saban side of it, Anthony, would say, look at the money he's bringing in for the University of Alabama
that he has brought in to the University of Alabama.
But that's not an argument against paying the players.
No.
But I'm just saying, when the people are bringing in money like that, nobody's saying that he shouldn't have a certain amount of money.
No, you're right there.
Well, the players ought to have it. We ought to cut this. Why you want to cut anything? If somebody can bring you in a gross of $250 or $300 million gross every year in football, it's only going to get better as the TV contracts and endorsement deals get higher and higher. It's only going to get better, especially now that you got Oklahoma and Texas in the league. All these marquee games and this playoff thing, they're talking about expanding that. That's going to be more games. And I'm going to tell you something. It's just a matter of time before these guys start having a spring opponent. Somebody's somewhere trying to figure that out, how to get the NCAA to go ahead and loosen the rules where you can bring in a spring opponent. That'll make a lot of money for people that ain't going bowling.
No question.
Also make money for people that are going bowling and playoffs and everything else. It's just a matter of time before that happens. But what I'm saying is anybody ought to be ashamed of themselves. Want to limit a player from making money. You take away the players, there is no $300 or $200 million.
Oh, you're right. There ain't no money.
Well,
great stuff, Anthony.
Did that for almost 100 years. So.
We are out of time. The music is playing. Brian, before we run out of time, let everybody know what's going on there at AuburnSports.com and how they can follow everything.
Plenty of recruiting coverage this week. Anything happening in the portal, baseball, softball, all that and more, AuburnSports.com. Follow me on socials, BMATAU.
All right, Brian, you got baseball tomorrow night?
I will be there, yes, definitely.
All right.
Hopefully it'll be nice
weather.
Yeah,
hopefully nice weather. Hey, if it's like this, it'll be perfect. Yep. Great stuff. Thanks, Brian. We are out of time here on the Monday Drive. We'll check in with the voice of the Tigers tomorrow. Andy Burcham joins us in hour number one. We're out of time, though. Have a good one. We are out of here.